Maria Shahada, Wally Collins, and Sean Eli, welcome to Coffee in the Clouds with Comedians. How you doing?
Very well.
Fantastic.
So, guys, we appreciate your time today. This has been a series that we've been doing, pandemic-driven. I know Sean hates it when I bring up the pandemic word, you know, the COVID word, etc. But here we are. We're in Zoom world, you know. Clubs are not open, etc. And we'd like to talk to you a little bit about, you know, comedy, your careers, etc. And hopefully, you know, we're going to be able to snap our fingers and, you know, get this thing behind us and get some, you know, normal back, right?
Right.
You know, why don't we go counterclockwise? Maria, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I? Oh, God. I'm Maria. I'm a comedian. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I live in London, coming to you from London. It's almost evening here. And what do I do? That's it. I make people laugh. I do a podcast called Two Non-Doctors with comedian Liz Mealy. That's a lot of fun. And I used to live in New York, and then I lived in LA. Now I live here, and who knows where I'll be next. After this world opens up again, who knows where I'm going.
Exactly.
Sean, you're up at bat.
I was going to say, I don't object to mentioning the virus. I just don't want to dwell on it for a half hour because I was on one podcast and the conversation just kept steering back to that. And I think people want a break from that. So
we should go riots then? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, I do want to thank the people in London for protesting because the U.S. press doesn't cover it much, but there's protests all over the world. Mm. But let's talk about happy stuff. So what made you flee the United States?
Love. Ah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, just, you know, that stuff. But it didn't work out. I'm a comedian. It can't work out. But I stayed in the U.K. because I really like it here. I like doing comedy here a lot. So I stayed.
Well, I want to get to Wally, but then I want to get back to you to ask about the differences. So Wally, tell us your life story. And I'm going to tell how I met the two of you because it's kind of interesting, but tell us a little bit about you.
My name's Wally Collins, W-A-L-I, if you're trying to follow me on IG. Collins, the good old Irish way. Wow, where do I start? I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts. I moved to New York City, pursued my comedy / acting career. And I'm very happy the way things turned out. And now I'm sitting in my dining room talking to my computer.
Talking to the whole world.
Yeah, the whole world. Yeah, yeah. Talking to my computer.
Well, this is the third time we're doing this. And the first two times I had a beard and it came in really thick.
Okay.
Saturday night I was at a Zoom call party and they broke us out into groups. And I was with three women and all three said, get rid of the beard. So
wow. Usually women like beards.
Because they said I couldn't compete with Wally Collins.
Or me, for that matter. I'm Egyptian.
No, it's a quarantine beard. You know, actually, my wife likes the goatee. And, I, you know, why not? Actually, I did have a full beard, but it was just driving me crazy. Just, oh. So we compromised, and then I ended up with this. So, yeah, it's you know, why not, man? You know, it's just the two of us. Well, actually, the three of us. That we have our dog. And so, you kind of like, you make peace, you know what I mean? Because we don't know how long we're going to be together. You know
what I mean? I don't see the dog.
What'd you say?
Where is Burger? I don't see
Burger. You know what? I got to find him. You got to give me a second. He's probably in the living room just chilling, whatever. But he doesn't like doing these because I put my friend the camera and he's like this again. So his agent called me and they're not too happy with it. So,
huh. Well, do you remember how we met, the circumstances?
I want to say it was a comedy show. Was it at, was it a comedy club?
At Gotham, you were on stage and somebody in the front row was having a medical issue.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah.
Wally says, I think this guy in the front row is having a seizure. And a few people laughed. It wasn't much of a punchline, but.
Okay.
Yes. Someone was actually having a seizure. My sister, she suffers from seizures. And someone in the front row was actually having a seizure. And it took a couple of minutes for them to realize that someone was actually needed medical attention. So yeah, that's what you want. And you know, while you're doing your set, is someone having a medical seizure.
How long did it take you to realize? Because if that were me on stage, I'd be like, God, I am killing it. They're on the floor. They love me. It was,
you know, yes, I ain't gonna lie. My ego did like, wow, even my setups are ripping. You know? So, but there was just that one person was like still like, you know, reacting to my the setup or my joke. I'm like, wait a minute. And it was really weird because he was with someone. And when he was going through it, the guy next to him was just kind of like watching the show, like, you know, and I'm like, is he having a, is the guy having a seizure? And he's like, yeah. I don't think this is the place, you know? And so I guess he figured that if he ignored it, you know, it's gonna pass or whatever. But it just felt, I just felt like it was really, really weird. I mean, I've seen my sister go through them, and it's very terrifying, and you're helpless. And sometimes when the person sees, you know, they could dislocate a shoulder, just swallow the tongue. Something could, you know, could happen. So that's when I was like, you know what, I'm not gonna play this off. This, let's just stop.
Back into this conversation. So
yeah, exactly. So but yes,
at Doctor Club. The 2-drink minimum applies to all people alive or dead. To get out of paying. But what you did, Wally, that I really liked is you looked off stage and you said you addressed one of the employees by name.
Right.
Like Cyrus, this guy.
Cyrus, right.
And that's how they knew you weren't screwing around. And then eventually an ambulance came and took the guy away.
Yeah, yeah, and got him. And I had to commentate, narrate the whole thing.
You're kidding. You had to stand on stage and still, like, tell them. Jokes and entertain.
It was so weird. It was awkward, but you know what? Being the professional that I am, you know what I'm saying? Being the true comedian, I took the situation and made it mine. And then I made a new friend. His name's Sean Eli.
Yeah.
And he lived, right? So you can't literally say you killed.
No. But I made someone seize. So I think that's it's on my resume, actually. If you check my bio. Some of my best work is seizing, making people seize, have seizures.
Maria, have you ever killed anybody from stage?
Not recently. It's been a while. So they actually asked me to stop bringing guns on stage. And, you know, it was my gimmick. It was my hook. So I really had to get funny after that.
Well, if you want to shoot people, you got to come back to America.
Yeah, I know. It's frowned upon in the UK. You know. Oh.
Very often when I do shows in New York, there's people from all over the world in the audience. And one of the things I say when there's people from like England and Canada is I say, I think the reason you guys came to visit the United States is because you can do things in America that you can't do in England and Canada, like shoot people. And
yeah, America's like the Vegas of the world. It's just like you go, you do all your naughty stuff. You come back, you don't talk about it.
Pretty much, I guess. But I remember meeting you, Murray, at Broadway Comedy Club. There was a show, it was a weekday show, and there were maybe 10 people in the audience, and a lot of the comics basically threw away their set, and they're like, I'm just going to screw around because nobody's here. And you were like, no, these people paid to get entertained, and you did a good show, and I remember that.
Oh, thanks. I don't remember that. But that's like 10 people in the audience. I'm like, there's 10 people. Why punish them?
Right.
You know, they came to see a show, but like... I never understood that, like, taking out on the audience thing. Like, well, I guess I'll just fuck around since no one's here. They're here. They paid.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I assume they paid.
Well, Sean, I know this is the third time that we're doing this, but Sean, tell us a little about yourself as well. I mean, what's your deal? What's your story?
I got sort of a different career path. Well, Wally was an architect before doing stand-up, because very few people start at like 22 years old after college, although Liz Mealy started at 16. So she's also a rule breaker. But I worked in finance for 20 years, and then I met somebody on a date who said, you should start doing stand-up. And I said, I don't want to. And she said, well, I just took a stand-up class, and you should too. And I did, and started performing. And, you know, 6 years later, I said, I have 2 full-time jobs now, and I got to get rid of one. So stupidly, I got rid of the lucrative one and in favor of the fun one.
Well, the stand-up's like a cult for a lot of people. I just took a class. You'll love it. You should do it. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And you just have to recruit people after that.
I also gave all my money to their church.
Yeah, you do. You spend all your money like giving it to like, and it barely comes back.
Well, you know.
Yes.
How did you?
Oh, there he is! Oh my God! Oh, stealing the show. We both said he's stealing the show. Get him out of here.
This is my Lion King impression. Here we go. Ready?
Circle of life.
Okay. That's Burger.
So Wally, how did you get in the game? How did this come to be?
I was an architect before I got into stand-up. I was designing buildings, and I told my mother that I would love to be an actor, and she said to me, why are you designing buildings if you want to be an actor? And I said, I come from Springfield, Massachusetts, and no one famous ever came from Springfield, Massachusetts. And she says, you never know unless you try. And I said, oh, you know where to start. She says, why don't you, you know, start doing stand-up and, you know, kind of parlay that into an acting career. And I was like, yeah, all right, tried it. So I'll try it. And so I went to a place that had comedy night. It was on a Wednesday. There's a place 45 minutes away from my home. So I made sure no one I knew was there, or someone I could know was there. And the place was called the Hot L Warren. It's actually called the Hotel Warren, but the E fell off. And everyone, you know, everyone liked calling it Hot L. No one put the E back, so they called it Hot L. And so I did 5 minutes, and I bombed. I was walking to my car, and the booker said, where are you going? I said, well, I stunk, and I'm sorry for that. He goes, no, you got the stage presence, which is like, you can't teach that, but you have to work on material, and you have to learn how to do that. And so he put $5 in my hand and said, see you next week. Work on a set. And so that kind of got the ball rolling. So every Wednesday, I would go to the Hot L Warren and work on my set.
Well, wait, you'll work for $5?
Yeah, the first time I went on stage, I made $5.
I just paid $25. I feel ripped off now.
So how is the world of COVID treating you? I mean, we already know the answer probably is like sucks, right? But what is going on? Are you able to use the internet? Are you able to use Zoom? Are you able to use any of the things that like YouTube, etc.? Or is it just, you know, we're in a drought? And we're all waiting for the drought to go away.
Right. I don't think it's fair to yourself, so, you know, or for actually for me, speak personally, to say, oh man, it sucks, and then kind of like go down that, so to speak, dark rabbit hole. You got to make the best of what you got. You know what I mean? And so yeah, I've been doing, you know, a lot of Zoom shows. I have a company called You Never Know. It's actually a motivational, inspirational, and encouraging company. And I wrote a book called The You Never Know Book of Encouragement. And I've been pushing the book, you know, re-editing it on Amazon. The book hit number 8 on the happiness category. You really got to make best of the the time that you have. And because I think and I'm writing jokes about, you know, this whole quarantine thing. You have to. And like I said, you make lemonade, as they say. And it's, you know, and I go to bed at night like, yeah, all right. So my day was, I did something today. So.
Maria, what about yourself?
I really resisted it. I resisted the whole Zoom show thing. I was like, it's not stand up. It's not what I want to do, but you can't. And I think people are finding out that actually we can have worldwide audiences, and actually it's not that weird. And actually, if you don't get on board, you're going to be left behind. And I think that once comedy clubs do open up again, I think that this is going to still stay as a medium, and it might integrate with the comedy clubs. I don't know. But if you don't do it, it's just, you're just doing yourself a disservice. It's like saying, oh, I won't do cruise ships, or I won't do, it's just another medium that you're going to have to learn to do, and you're going to have to adjust or fall behind. Hmm. You know, social media is the same way. It's just like, you have to get out there and put yourself on it. And, you know, I resisted that for a long time too. But if you don't, then you're sort of, you're just going to get forgotten.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm worried about that, because I've been resisting doing Zoom shows, because it's not that so much that I need to hear the audience, but the audience needs to hear the audience. And that's a lot tougher with Zoom. But 2 weeks ago, somebody offered me what I thought was a significant amount of money to do a Zoom show for a retirement party. And I talked about it with him, and I told him all the drawbacks, and he said, well, let's do it anyway. And I looked at the money and said, sure. And then he decided, no, we want to wait till we can do it live, because we want you in the same room. So it never got done. but it's something I'm looking into. Maria, I wanted to ask you, because you perform all over the world, and I wanted to, can you mention you like performing in London? What are the differences?
Between like the United States and the UK, that's hard. Like London, I'll say this, I performed in New York, and New York is like a ton of stage time with a little bit of audience, and London is less stage time, but a lot of audience, you know, and the audience is great. And just, it built up my confidence, because I spent 7 years in LA doing comedy, and LA is like less stage time and less audience. And so it's just like, you go 7 years performing to 3-4 people and most people who are other comedians. And you go, I just like almost quit comedy in LA. Cause I was like, why am I doing this? And then I came to London, and it's just like packed rooms all the time. They love coming out to see comedy. They love laughing, and it was so much fun. And so it just was worth it to me to stay and kind of build my career here.
Have you ever performed in Ireland? Because I was in Ireland about 2 years ago, and I have to say I'm moderately funny for a comic in the United States, and in Ireland it was so different. They just loved me, and I'm like, I never want to go home again.
Yeah, and everybody's drunk, you know, so like, that's all it is, really. Yeah, but you take it. You just build your confidence up. You take it and you bring it back.
Cheater.
Yeah. But I did perform in Ireland once. It was in Dublin a few years ago. I can't remember the place now, but it was a great show. But yeah, it does feel like cheating a little bit sometimes. You know, it's like if you go to the European countries with less of a comedy scene, with less comedians, you just kind of, if you do well, you kind of feel like, well, there aren't as many people here, so it's easier to do well, you know? So it's, you kind of have to balance that out.
I did a show in the Netherlands, and it was a place that had comedy once a month, and they packed the room, and it was a great show. And then I said to the guy running it, you know, you're packing this once a month. Why don't you do it twice a month? And because these people will come out twice a month, and they keep asking after the show, they were saying, we want more comedy. And he said, no, once a month is fine for me. Capitalist in my, like, you, people are going to pay you twice as much money, make twice as much money. And he's like, no, I'm fine with this.
Yeah. You got to get the people who are like hungry for, I don't know. You want a producer who wants the money and will put on the shows and really give care. But if they don't do it for the money, or if they just want like once a month stage time, there's nothing you could do. But yeah, people will come out. And I was, before this whole thing went down, I was going to go to Spain. Where was I going to go? Madrid, I think. And the girl was trying to figure out how to, she was like, I'm going to try two shows in one night. I think we can fill the room twice. And it's like, you know, they're still, I don't know what I say there. I don't know who I'm talking about, but I guess in some countries they're still figuring out how much they can put on without overdoing it.
Well, I was in Thailand in December, and in Bangkok, there were a couple of rooms, and one was one night a week, and one is, they have a full-time comedy club. They're there 7 nights a week, and they're mainly performing for tourists, but it's tourists from all over the world, and it was kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't been to Bangkok yet. How was it?
It was, well, I have to say, my first couple of days, I'm like, why did I come here? Because it's really hot and sticky. And that, you know. But after a couple of days, I'm like, I can really appreciate this. And the food, street food is great. A little scary, because you're like, this guy doesn't have a refrigerator and the meat has been sitting here all day. But I didn't get sick. And, you know, I tried to pick the places that looked a little bit safer. But I had a great time performing.
Yeah.
Well,
I love that your review of Bangkok was, I didn't get sick. It was great.
I've got a question for all three of you. I want to ask Wally first, though.
Yeah.
Is getting a sitcom, is that the holy grail? Is that like, okay, that's what everybody wants? Or is it like, no, not so much? Like that's not the standard of success? Because shockingly, I've heard people say no, where I would assume it was going to be yes, right? So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, that's very interesting, because for a while it was, as you say, the holy grail for a lot of comics, like in the 90s. You know, the sitcoms were, you know, the next, you know, that hot comedian. And then what happened is that it got like overly saturated, and comedians who weren't necessarily, I'm gonna say, were that good, and they just kind of like banked on, you know, 10 minutes of stand-up, and they said, oh, we're going to build a show around you. But, you know, that comic didn't really have the goods. And so there were more and more comedians like that who just weren't passing, and that kind of just died off. But now what's going on, a lot of, and now there's, you know, because of streaming, you know, there's comedy series, you know, there's sketch, there's film, movies. So a lot of the comics, even there's, you know, the different websites like the Instagrams, YouTube, who are just, some of these comics starting their own channels. You know what I mean? So I think now it's like everyone is, their holy grail is different. You know, what they say is, you know, that they made it. For me, you know, I would love to have, yeah, a comedy series and tour as a comedian. And I am, you know, I haven't done series yet, but I am still acting, you know, I got some stuff out there. But, like, you know, the answer to your question, I think it's different for everyone. But for me, yeah, you know, comedy series and still do stand-up.
Maria?
I just think, like, it's so, yeah, when I first started doing comedy, the sitcom was the ultimate goal. And I hung on to that for years. I still want to have a sitcom. I'm still writing pilots and I'm still trying, but like, I feel like this industry is falling apart around us and people are like turning on their TVs less and less and just in favor of YouTube and Netflix and stuff. And like, you know, I would love to have something on Netflix, but like that whole half an hour, you know, kind of like Everybody Loves Raymond type sitcom is just that sort, it's gone. And so, It's like there are so many ways to get a following now. And a lot of comedians who wanted TV roles just to build their following to go out and then headline theaters, they can do that just by putting stuff on YouTube or by having a really popular podcast. Or, I mean, everything's changing, but I'd still like one.
I'm the rare comic who isn't interested in a sitcom. I mean, if they offered me one, I wouldn't turn it down, but it's not something I'm pursuing because to me, actors are just reciting somebody else's words and I can write my own words. And I never thought I would, but I like the live performance aspect of you're in front of an audience. My favorite thing is to write a joke, think of a joke on the way to a gig and try it out the minute I hit the stage. And to me, that's the most amazing feeling when it works.
Yeah. Is there a huge difference when you're at a club like Gotham or something versus like a corporate event? You know, same number of people in the room, right? But people that are at like a club, they're, well, they know why they're there. It's a comedy club, etc. Where if it's a corporate event or a party, it's not the main reason that they were there, right? So do you modify your acts? Do you modify what you do when you have a captive audience versus a non-captive audience?
Right. Yeah, is that to me or all of them?
Yeah, you all of you, please. Yeah.
Oh, I do a lot of corporate shows, and you do have to, so to speak, alter your setups or whatever. But for the most part, you know, once again, if you're in the gang long enough, you know how to round them up, getting their attention and getting them focused. A comedy club, yeah, it's different. Yeah, they come to laugh. And I don't know if you want to call it easier, but it's not as much work basically to have one focus because they're already. But yeah, but you know, but a lot of times too, the corporate shows, they know that they're gonna have some kind of entertainment, but you know, even for the comedian, sometimes they have to alter their sets or even their comedy, their jokes because it's a corporate. There's a difference between TV clean and corporate clean because even the subject matter, because people are at work if you really think about it. And all those are just in a different building. You know, HR is there, you know, your supervisor's there. So, you know, you really can't be doing, you know, those blue jokes, even though they would laugh at a comedy club, but they're gonna be very, very self-conscious of themselves because they don't wanna get fired if they laugh at it. And then, you know, yeah, and so then it makes it even awkward. And then HR will come, you know, to your set or whoever booked you, whatever, after your set and say, yeah, you know what? This is not going to work in the corporate world. So that's, for me, it's altering just that much.
I don't do a lot of corporate gigs, but I like just, you know, birthday parties are always a lot different and I don't like to do them. It's just, I find myself in a room with people and they want to laugh, they want to have a good time, they're partying, but like I start talking about a breakup or something and suddenly I realize like I'm bumming these people out on someone's birthday. They don't want to hear about my breakup. They want to talk about themselves. Like I should be roasting the birthday person. That's really what they want when they hire you for a birthday party. It's just a little bit of your act, but make it about us. And I'm very selfish with my act. I talk about me the whole time. But yeah, you do have to change it up like that for birthday parties. And I imagine corporate events, you sort of had to, you know, break up the tension a bit and just talk about the room before just launching into your set.
Cool.
I did a birthday party a few years ago at a big house in New Jersey. And you drive up and you're like, how many people live in this house? And you get there and it's one of these places you walk in and the entryway is the size of my house. And then that leads into a foyer, which is the entryway to five more foyers. And like the house is just gigantic. And then they lead me into the living room, which is like a stadium. And there's 50 people sitting on, you know, 30 couches in this giant room. And you're like, how is this a residence? And everybody kept interrupting me. Now, when you do a corporate or, I mean, there's things you do when people interrupt you, but when it's a corporate or a private party, no matter how mean they get, you can't really be mean back to them. But I realized they wanted to be the center of attention. And my job is just to make sure they had fun. If I didn't get to any planned stand-up, it didn't matter. As long as they were having fun and I was facilitating the fun, if they were...
Take the credit.
They left after, you know, 45 minutes of it. They had a good time and it really didn't matter. And I was fine with that.
I love facilitating the fun. That should be the name of your corporate gig company. Fun facilitators.
I mean, whether I deliver specific punchlines or not, as long as the audience has fun, that's what matters. And so, I'm sure they all left saying I was much funnier than that guy. And I'd be like, fine, who cares?
So guys, we're going to have links to all your websites and YouTube channels or, you know, cat photos, whatever you got, you know, we're going to have links to all that stuff. But if you had 60 seconds to talk to somebody in our community that could be hiring for a college, a university, a school, a corporate event, et cetera, what's the 60 second elevator pitch as to, you know, why they should be going to your website and checking you out? So ladies first.
Oh my God, this is like a reality show challenge. This is insane. You should hire me because I am an inspirational comedian. I'll show you what it's like to follow your dreams in spite of all of the adversity in your life. And I'll be funny while I do it.
Not bad. I'd hire you.
Thank you.
Wally, you're next.
Hi, Maria. man, I've been doing this for, close to 30 years. And I know what's up. I've done it all. I've done TV. I've done film. I've done, birthday parties. I've done laundromats. It's all about having fun, having a good time. And me too, you can do it. You never know. It's all about, I am that reason why, you know, you should live a regretless life and have a good time in life.
Very cool. All right. And for me, I would say hire me because your corporation's broke and you can't afford the other two that are on the call here.
Very cool. Well, guys, I thoroughly enjoy this. We're certainly hoping that world goes back to normal soon and that you can get back into live, you know, clubs and, you know, live rooms. But I don't know what the world's going to look like. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's ever going to go back 100% to where it was. So we might be doing more Zoom-esque type of events. We just don't know. But this does reach millions of people. I wish I could take more personal credit for it, but hey, you know, I'm going to ride the wave as long as we can. So this was another session of Coffee in the Clouds with comedians. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.